And if you're that kind of a person, you fully understand what Giannis is saying. You understand what he's saying when he says, if we're not all on the same page, I might have to go somewhere else to win because that's what I'm here for. That doesn't fall the same on people generally.
Yep.
As it does on people who understand what he's talking about. You know, for him, it's business as usual. So that's maybe a reason that he and I connected, because in that way, we're very similar. I do it as a broadcaster. It's totally self-imposed discipline. It's self-imposed whatever it is. I mean, you know, people say you did this wrong. I said, you know what? I knew that before you did. And, you know, that's just who I am. I mean, you know. You just get so involved in it and you're so dedicated to doing things as well as you possibly can.
Jim, you are an absolute legend in the sports reporting industry in the area. How has retirement been?
So far, so good. I'm enjoying not having a daily agenda. It's nice to wake up and be able to do whatever sometimes I have to do some things, but most of the time I just get to decide what I want to do. So I enjoy that after all those years of watching the clock as closely as you must do in television. And it's been good. I miss the work a little bit. I miss the preparation, but I can still do some of that. I can occupy myself pretty well. So I think I made the right decision for myself.
As Shelley said, you really are a legend, especially in Milwaukee and with the Bucks. What was it like after 40 years and, you know, watching them be in the finals? What was that experience like?
Well, it was wonderful. It happened in my 35th and final season calling the games for the Bucks, and I announced my retirement, I think it was in May, and actually Giannis announced it, I guess. But and then in July, they won the championship. So that tied a pretty nice bow on the season, tied a beautiful bow on my entire career. It was fantastic. I had COVID at the time, so I didn't get to go to the clinching games, the last two games. And I was able to watch it at home, which was interesting. I think some things happened personally with phone calls and text messages that night that maybe I would have missed or at least not felt the impact of as I did. So that was very interesting, but great for the city, great for the state. Another example of how sports teams can bring us all together. One lasting memory that I have, Danica, is going out the nights that I was able to in front of Fiserv Forum for the home games and having, 60,000, 40,000, 80,000 people outside all collectively enjoying the moment and behaving very well. And I talked to them about that every night I was out there. I congratulated them on what they were showing the world. And so that was very important to our city and state and to each of us, really, if we stop to think about it. That was a very special time in this city.
Absolutely. You talked about Giannis, announcing your retirement, but I often think of, saw it recently with Bob Uecker, with all of the players celebrating, and just the rapport and the relationships that you have developed over all of these years. How has that impacted you?
Well, it's interesting, Shelley. Purposefully never had close relationships with players. I treated it as we're both professionals. Obviously, I was with them all the time. We had constant contact, but I didn't go to dinner with players. I didn't hang out with players. I didn't curry their favor. So that was the way I operated my entire career. And then all of a sudden, this 18-year-old from Greece shows up and something special happened between us. And we were just on the same page. We had our annual discussion. And
discussion.
I mean, we had an annual sit down and we talked about life and talked about basketball. But the rest of the time it was, hello, Yanni, how you doing? And, what's up? And what do you think about this? But just in passing. So those sit downs were very interesting. And that's where we kind of clicked. And he later told me that he appreciated me holding him accountable during those interviews. And I didn't even know I was doing that. I would follow up with him and I would ask him a little deeper question, maybe that you wouldn't normally ask a person because we were just on that same page sort of thing. We were just talking about life and like we were sitting in a den somewhere. And it just worked with him. So he was very special in that regard across my career. And I value that very much. I think in part because it's so singular, because he's the only one. And he's a special guy. He's a special human being. And I will always believe that.
Just the t-shirt that he wore. I mean, just the little things to make sure that you felt the love. Well, like that's what I remember. Bit.
And my son was watching in Austin, Texas, and he teared up and his friend called me and said, your son can't talk on the phone right now. He's very emotional. And so that still gets me. That's not about Jim, though. That's about Giannis. And that's about the kind of person he is. And I want people to always remember that because he didn't have to do that. I got a call from somebody very near the top of the NBA that night, and I was in this room, and they said, Jim, we've never seen anything like this. And players at the pinnacle of their professional career, or anyone at the top of their professional career, sometimes doesn't remember others. And so I want people to understand that he remembered me, his brother, a couple of coaches who had COVID who weren't able to be there. That's a very special human quality that he has. And I mean, it humbled me beyond description. It was phenomenal. I don't know that I was worthy of that, but I take it in the spirit it was offered and I'll never forget it.
That's so neat.
You're certainly worthy of it.
Not in my mind, but you know, he was supposed to enjoy that moment with his teammates and the city and the state and all the fans. And he took that moment to think about someone else. So that was very special.
But Jim, think of the impact that you clearly made on him.
Well, you know, as you say that, Shelley, my mind jumps immediately to the fact that when Gianni lost his father at a very young age, I went up to him and I talked to him about that because the same thing had happened to me. I lost my father when he was 51. I was 25 at the time. And so there was a real similarity there in our lives. And I don't know that touched him, but he thanked me for the discussion. So, you know, there were those kinds of things, those parallels. And, you know, I'm going public with something that I guess is pretty private, but I know he wouldn't mind because his humanity always shows through and I always appreciate that.
Yeah, without a doubt.
100%. I mean, he's definitely not just in Milwaukee, all around the world, but especially in the city of Milwaukee, just someone that everyone, I think, looks up to. And when you speak to his character and all of that, it's truly evident in all of the community work that he does. Is it, from your perspective, you have a very unique view of the players. You know, is it easy to tell who is giving back in the community? I don't know. I would just be curious from your perspective on the court, play-by-play, interacting with them. Can you tell the difference between a guy who's felt like philanthropic, giving back, and someone who's just playing the game?
Very excellent question. And I go back to the beginning of my career when I started to witness all of this and watch it and pay attention to it. And sure, back then it wasn't as prevalent. Perhaps that is a product of resources growing over the years for players. You know, way back, there was always a player or two or three that was willing to give back. And then, you know, you had the feeling that, you know, sometimes, quite frankly, it felt like a photo opportunity. But today, the Milwaukee Bucks, and I think other teams in the state, are blessed with people who are honest in their philanthropy. I call it being charitable with a purpose. They have situations that they, you know, prefer to support. Giannis and Mariah with the diaper mission, and players have their things. Drew Holiday and his wife have been fantastic. Brooke Lopez, Pat Connaughton. So there's a great tradition in our city and state now of players who put their money where their heart is. You know, people say put your money where your mouth is. They put their money where their heart is, and I think we all benefit from that. So it's grown. It's gotten a lot better over the years that I watched it, and that's a very positive thing in our state.
Without a doubt. I think going back to what you said, Jim, with, you know, some did it for the photo op. You know, it's that authenticity. It's them finding their why, and them being truly passionate about wanting to go help.
And following up, right? And being consistent with that. And again, you know, we can't discount the fact that there are greater resources that players have available these days, and they're doing good things with that. So, you know, to me, it's just a total positive, and it's evolved into something that we should all appreciate first, and then be thankful for and grateful for second. And
without a doubt, yeah,
you know, we all benefit from that, and they give back in very positive ways. And this is, you know, what we see. There's another side to what most of us don't see when they stop and talk to a young person or a child at a game or sign an autograph or, you know, not just sign and walk away. They connect. I call them touches. You know, they're touches. Yeah. And players have gotten really good about understanding that, you know, without support, they wouldn't be where they are. And I think that's part of it, too. So, and the NBA and teams have done a wonderful job in the case of the league I was most associated with, and other leagues do as well. But I can speak to the NBA, which has done a wonderful job in nurturing all of this over the 35 years I was involved. They, you know, it started out where, you know, this is something you should do. And then as it evolved 30 years later, in my case, it was something that you probably must do. And you gain from it, and you understand that giving is really receiving, and all of those things. So I think the leagues and the teams have done a wonderful job in nurturing all of this as well.
Absolutely agree. We talked with several, you know, individuals that might be more towards the beginning of their career in the sports world, who consider you a mentor. And so I guess my question to you is twofold. One, when you started out, did you have a mentor? And two, what does it mean that to you that some of these individuals that are just starting out want you and want your knowledge, you to inspire them with their knowledge as they're starting out?
Well, I certainly did have mentors. And when I was just getting started in the broadcasting business, I don't know that I understood all of that. And I certainly wasn't seeking mentors, but I seemed to bump into them. And they offered certain things to me. It might be one single sentence or one single act or something that various people did for me that stuck with me the rest of my life. And, you know, as I found myself in the business, and this comes later, because when you're starting out, you're focused, you're in a tunnel. You know, it's about getting better at what you're doing so you can survive. And then as you go through that, you say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm doing what that person shared with me, or I'm doing this, and I learned that from he or she. And so you start to formulate this idea that you haven't done this by yourself. You were in that tunnel, but you had help along the way. And as I went through that tunnel, you know, it became, I won't say natural, but it became fairly easy for me to make myself available to people who might benefit from some of that. I certainly don't, you know, present myself as a mentor, but if somebody asks or needs help, I'm involved in a mentor program now that I'm retired at Concordia University. But short of that, I'm always available to somebody who seeks out anything that I might have gone through that I could share with them. I don't dispense everything that I might know universally. I mean, I tend to be a little picky about who I share things with, because sometimes it can be lost on a person. And, you know, after a while, you kind of get the feeling of who's serious and who's going to be paying attention and who's going to put it to use. There's just not time to, you know, broadcast everything like that. So, you know, there have been people that I connect with again, and you have a feeling about a person. And I'm willing to share anything with anybody, but some people get special treatment just because of who they are and what they bring to the table, right? And I'm being pretty open about that, but I think that's fair, and I think that's legitimate.
Absolutely. From your beginning of broadcasting career to now, there have been so many changes in media and how people consume media. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen over the years?
Well, the internet and cell phones and, you know, Twitter, X, you know, everything social media wise changed at all. When I began, and this was a long, long time ago now, I mean, it was in the fairly early 70s when I started trying to figure this business out. You know, you started with the morning paper, and if you were lucky enough to work in a city like Milwaukee that had an afternoon paper, those were your sources. And then when I started doing games, you know, I was seeking out of town sources, and, you know, it was hard to come by. You could get a Chicago Tribune or whatever, but, you know, and then the internet came along, and I was an early adopter in the sense that Brad Lohaus, who played for the Bucks, had a little tiny computer that he bought, and he wanted a bigger one after a month. So I bought his old one, and I started figuring out how to get into newspapers around the country. You could, it's not really coding, but you had to be kind of, it took a little bit to figure out, you know, how to get into those sports pages. And of course, that kind of grew along the way. So I started pretty early. And that gave me an advantage because I could read a lot and have information at my fingertips that I didn't know I could have and maybe that other people didn't have. And so that was great for me, and it helped me a great deal. And then as that became mainstream, then I realized that other reporters now had that information also. So what could Jim bring to the table that somebody else was missing? Well, I went backwards, and I went back to talking to players and coaches religiously in addition to reading. So you kind of constantly have to figure out what's going on. And then the public had all of this information, and they do today. I went in my last years, I don't know, might have been 10 or 15 years. I'd get ready to do a game, and in the morning I'd always tell myself, okay, the fans know more than I do at this particular moment of the day. What do you do now? You know, you work very hard to get information that they don't have. I called it diving for pearls. I felt like I was a pearl diver. I was looking for little tiny pearls that somebody might have missed or that people didn't know yet. And you get those from all over the place, from talking to all kinds of people. And so, I mean, it's a full-time job if you're trying to find pearls in this business today with social media. So I think that was the biggest change. And then, you know, when I started, there were three networks. You know, ABC, NBC, CBS. Well, today, I mean, you know, there's so much sports television. And this was predicted. When I was in high school, they said one of the jobs that's going to be just exploding is sports TV and sports casting and all of that. And that's not why I got into it, but it certainly came true. And that has created all sorts of things. And now, as we speak, we're watching some of that model of regional sports networks and subscriber paying your cable company to get ESPN, et cetera, the subscriber model is starting to unravel a bit as we now move into streaming. So technologically, this business has been very rapidly changing and very fascinating. So I don't see that ending. I think, you know, high definition, you know, I mean, you know, they said TV put 10 pounds on you, high definition put 30 on you, you know, so constantly evolving business, which made it exciting and interesting. And I've always enjoyed that part of it, too. But I think those are some of the major changes, Danica. I think I've lost my audio for a second here. I can't hear you, Shelley.
Shelley, you're muted.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Now I can hear
you. Okay. Sorry.
It's all right.
That was on me. That was me. That was not you. Some of the things that I heard you say really translates across industry, translates athletes, non-athletes, and that's doing your homework and working hard.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
Right. Right. And I think that's lost sometimes. And so I love hearing you state the different ways that you continue to grow?
Well, I think you constantly have to evolve because everything around you is evolving. And, you know, you have to absorb all of this. You have to engage in it. And there are no secrets. I mean, it's just hard work. It's and you have to like the hard work. I guess I'm a little competitive. I wanted to find the pearl, you know, and
yeah.
maybe, you know, have a few pearls that other people didn't have. I mean, that's what it's about for me. And then I think everyone benefits from that. I think our audience benefited from that. And I worked with some great people, too. I have to say that. And you know, together, I think it was a worthy effort. You know, when Giannis, I'm going to go back to Giannis for a second, because after this last playoff season, he got into the whole, there is no failure. It's just a stepping stone. Okay, so for an elite athlete, I think that's very true. And I think anybody who is disciplined in their craft, their job, their career, and they're really going at it with a distinct discipline every day, they understand what he was saying.
Yep.
I don't know about everyone at large understanding that necessarily, because there certainly is failure in life. Yep. And so we have to be kind of discerning there when we understand where Giannis is talking about his world, and that doesn't always translate easily. I think the lessons can translate, but I think the message sometimes get lost because people don't experience that level of commitment, resolve, dedication, absolute, total. You know, he gets up in the morning and goes to practice, and the first thing he tries to do right is tie his shoes properly. And it starts from there. So that's how fine it is. And I think any job can be like that, but that's an individual commitment and discipline. And if you're that kind of a person, you fully understand what Giannis is saying. You understand what he's saying when he says, if we're not all on the same page, I might have to go somewhere else to win because that's what I'm here for. Mm-hmm. That doesn't fall the same on people generally.
Yep.
As it does on people who understand what he's talking about. You know, for him, it's business as usual. So that's maybe a reason that he and I connected, because in that way, we're very similar. I do it as a broadcaster. It's totally self-imposed discipline. It's self-imposed whatever it is. I mean, you know, people say you did this wrong. I said, you know what? I knew that before you did. And, you know, that's just who I am. I mean, you know, you just get so involved in it that, and you're so dedicated to doing things as well as you possibly can, that, you know, it's a world I love. I mean, that's, you know, and then I had to learn how to apply that kind of discipline and dedication and resolve to other parts of my life, because you get that tunnel vision and, you know, sometimes you don't treat people like you treat your job. And so, you know, it's a good thing we have a longer life expectancy, because it takes that much time to figure all this out as you go along. You make the end result. I want everybody to understand that the end result is what you look back on. If you've made progress and you've improved, you've probably done a pretty good job, whatever it is you're talking about. Did that answer that question?
It did. Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have any standout or just profound moments from your career, whether it be someone, something said to you, a certain game, anything that just like stands out as one of your favorite moments?
Well, I mean, the championship obviously is the greatest moment, and I wasn't even there. And I say that, I mentioned that things happened during that night while I was sitting on my couch here, and my son was watching. You know, he was born into the Bucks life in 1988. I had just started in 86 with the Bucks, and then 87 with the Brewers. So he was born into this, and he can't escape it. And he was watching, and at the precise moment that I knew the Bucks were going to win the championship, Chris Middleton hit a shot, and the Bucks were up 8, got down to 4, and Middleton hit the shot, and I said, it's over, they're going to win. And my phone rang, and it was my son. And so he was on that exact same page. He said, they just won the championship. I said, yeah, I know. And so those are great moments. And then the whole thing with the T-shirt with Giannis.
Yeah.
His neighbor saying, your son's sobbing in my kitchen, so I thought I'd call you and tell you that. But, you know, you put so much into it. Your family sacrifices for us to do this and be gone and travel. And there are prices to be paid for all of that. Generally, you're lucky if there aren't. And so, you know, those are important things. There have been so many great game moments, it would be hard to quantify. I mean, I had the privilege of calling a major league no-hitter, Juan Nieves, 1987, April 15th, Memorial Stadium in Baltimore. And, you know, that's a special thing for me. But the championship supersedes all of that. And then Giannis puts on the T-shirt, which supersedes that. And so, yeah, the whole thing in total has been just magical. And, you know, you can't really, you can hope to have a career like I've been privileged to have, but you really shouldn't expect it. I never did. I tried the hard work route and it paid off for me. And I'm so grateful and thankful for all the people that I've been exposed to. I mean, we're around some of the top of the food chain in their business, right? The best players and coaches in the world. And if I didn't learn something in 35 years watching them every day, I was, you know, what a waste that would have been. And I learned about life. I learned all kinds of things, and very happy to have been able to do that. So I would say the whole thing was probably the cherry on top for me. And I don't know how it happened, but it did.
Hard work and relationships.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, and there's a little secret there too. That just popped into my head, Shelley. You know, when you're around these types of people, one of the things that worked for me, and it was a natural thing because as a kid, I was very shy. This would have been the last job I would have ever thought I would ever do. I couldn't talk in front of two people comfortably, but that quietness and that lack of a need to be heard or seen allowed me to sit quietly and observe. You know, when I talk to kids, I say, we have two eyes, two ears, and one mouth. Do the math. Use your eyes and your ears and you know, take it easy with the mouth, because you're going to learn more when you're seeing and hearing than when you're talking. All you know when you're talking is what you know. When you watch and listen, you learn what other people know. And so that worked for me. And I think that's a key. I think that's a key for all of us, really. And I just happen to be the kind of a person that was too scared to talk too much until I started getting paid for it. And then I learned how to do that.
What's your take? We ask all of our guests. What's your take on what athletes doing good means?
Well, I try not to. I'm very careful with putting my thoughts and my beliefs on other people, because, you know, I just don't like to do that.
Yeah.
If I were an athlete, I would consider it a necessity to do well. I think it's a privilege, and I thought it was a privilege for me to be in the circles and in the areas where I was allowed to go. And I think we have an obligation to pay that back. And I think we have an obligation to honor that. That's a better way to say it for me. I think being in the NBA requires me to honor that. And being around the greatest players and coaches in the world, you know, requires me to honor that. And there are different ways to do that. So I think it's an individual thing, but if you are blessed, you should bless others.
That's a saying Aaron Jones uses a lot.
Oh, really?
It is. Yes. Yes. Okay.
I did not know that, but I agree with him.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time to share your knowledge and to share your insights, because you've done fantastic work in the city and throughout the country. And we just appreciate you sharing your time with us.
It's my pleasure. This entire thing has been my privilege. And my goal is to try to keep giving back in any way that I can. And still be retired, by the way. You still have.
Well, enjoy that retirement.
I will. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being with you. Thank you.
Thank you.